Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 26th of December, Anno Domini 2009. And you lucky people, you're listening to the last sound bites of 2009. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. I hope Santa was good to each and every one of you and that you got everything you wanted and more. God knows you all deserve it.
Yep.
If you'd like to, give us a call and let us know what you got for Christmas and how it's working. I'm mostly interested in the tech stuff. You know, if you got, like, underwear or socks, we don't really care, okay? So give us a call. It's 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Outside the 585 area code, it's 1-800-790-0415. Big news of the week, Microsoft lost its December 22nd appeal of a $290 million judgment that found the world's software maker infringed an XML-related patent held by i4i Limited of Canada. As a part of the ruling, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit issued an injunction barring Microsoft from selling versions of its popular Word program that contained the disputed technology. The effective date of the injunction is January 11th, 2010. I4I is especially pleased with the court's decision to uphold the injunction, an important step in protecting the property rights of small investors, I4I co-founder Michael Volpe said in a statement. Microsoft had no immediate comment on the decision. The patent, originally submitted in 1994, deals with XML-related formatting for a word processing program utilizing algorithms to create a data structure called a metacode map, within which resides formatting information. What all that means is the way that when Microsoft creates a Word document, they compress it and stick an XML file and some formatting information and a couple of other things in. You could actually unzip that file and see the multiple other files that are in it. Microsoft's claim is that I4I failed to corroborate its creation date for the technology behind the patent. However, unlike in priority disputes where requiring corroboration of an inventor's testimony makes sense, there is no reason to require corroboration in all instances, and this court never required it, I4I said. Microsoft also has escape avenues, but they didn't take any of them. Small IT companies have a history of winning patent lawsuits against IT giants in the Texas court system, and it's happened. Anescape won against Microsoft and Nintendo. Sara sued 23 tech giants, including Microsoft and Apple, over a touchscreen patent. So our question of the week on the poll at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is this. Will you stop using Word if Microsoft changes the document format? And the choices are never, I won't even notice it, I already use openoffice.org, it's free, and AbbeyWord is free and works for me. So far, we have approximately 40... Oh, dear, I hate it when it does that. We have approximately 43 votes, most of whom are already using openoffice.org, and the rest of you, being honest, say you won't even notice it. But once you've made your vote, I know that that's not enough for you, so you need to say more. So if you look at the little yellow box underneath, you will see a link that says... give us your opinion. That takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Where you can enter your opinion, as four people have already done. When you do that, take a look around at what I do at my website. I put out a newsletter. You can search all of my old questions and answers, rants and raves, tips and tricks, everything else. It's only $15 a year. I have no idea why you're not doing it. It's cheap at half the price.
What?
And, of course, the mighty Karnak is...
I got something to say first.
Oh, and then come back and join us at the Soundbites forums. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Steve
Well, Ray. No, I was saying two things interesting about this is it only affects Word 2007.
Yeah.
So they can't sell Word 2007 for Windows, and they can't sell Office 2007 for Windows, which includes Word 2007 for Windows.
Or the student pack, which includes 2007.
Right. Well, most of them all have Word.
Word 2008 for Macintosh is not affected, which is strange because it supports the .docx XML format.
It supports it, but it apparently isn't a native format.
And it must not infringe on the patents. And one of the ironies is that Microsoft switched to the .docx format a couple years ago, and everyone hated it, and most people didn't like it because they had to upgrade their old versions of Office, who now wouldn't read the new formats.
Right.
So most people didn't upgrade to the new version until they were forced kicking and screaming to. So now if it changes again, they'll be happy because it'll go back to the way that used to be.
No, what'll do is they'll change it to
something
else again.
They'll make a third, another format.
Right, exactly. Because they have to. They're forced into it. This is only good for Microsoft. That's all it is. Yep. It's
forcing
nice.
People to buy a new version of Office.
Of course, those of us who use OpenOffice.org or Abbey Word and using Open Document Format, which is, I don't know how it's different, but apparently they didn't sue, at least not yet, didn't sue OpenOffice.org. Of course, OpenOffice.org is free. I don't know what kind of money they'd expect to make out of something that's given away. So
well,
I'm
the other
sure
thing
that
happens a lot of times with these patent lawsuits is they go after the big target. And now that they've won, they can go after all the other targets using the Microsoft win as precedent in all the other lawsuits. So they can say, all right, we already beat Microsoft, so why don't you just settle now and give us a lot of money?
Right.
When they go to everybody else using the XML formats.
Right. And it may work that way. You never know.
Yeah. Time will tell.
You know time what I mean? Will no. tell.
What I couldn't find is... Is this really the company that invented the thing, or is it a patent troll?
Oh, I suspect it's a patent troll.
Yeah.
But that's a big industry
these
days.
I don't think anybody... It doesn't matter if they invented it. They patented it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, they own the patent.
Yeah.
Yeah, the big thing with patent trolls these days is they buy up patents hoping to sue somebody over it. That's their business model. We're going to buy a patent and hope to sue somebody. They don't plan on making anything of their own. They don't plan on making any sales or any money of their own. They're going to sue other people.
Right,
that's
right.
An interesting business model.
Well, it will be interesting to see what they do because, as Drock pointed out in the IRC chat, IBM and Sun and et cetera use all that in the StarOffice and OpenOffice.org formats. StarOffice is sold, so I don't know. I guess we'll see. It should be interesting. K-Word is out there as well. Drock, you're absolutely right. Abbey Word, however, I don't use K-Word. It doesn't do it for me. I don't know why. It just doesn't.
No, I like OpenOffice.
Yeah, I really like OpenOffice. It does everything I need it to do, nothing I don't. Makes me happy.
And, it does even more. I mean, you can sit there and save something as a PDF file. Word doesn't do that.
And I have often opened Word documents that were broken.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And OpenOffice.org opens them. You might lose a little bit of the data.
Right where the problem occurred.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But the rest of it opens just fine.
Well, that's been a trick for years with corrupted Excel documents, corrupted PowerPoint documents. Try another program and see how much it can read.
Well, the other thing that solved a number of issues for my client, two of my clients, was I had some that were still using, believe it or not, well, it works for Word 97.
Yep.
I mean, it works, no problem. And she was having all kinds of issues because she was corresponding with a few other folks, and they were using both 2003 and 2007.
Right.
And, you know, she's, well, what am I going to do? I says, you want a very simple, she was, any, I don't care, I got to get this done, you know, what is it going to cost me? I go, how about free?
Yeah, free works for most
people.
She goes,
but, well, how good can it work? I says, it works fantastic.
And Millions of people use it every day.
It almost doesn't matter how good it is. It's free.
Right.
Well, no, she got it. And she goes, you know what? I'm never going back. How can I thank you? I said, you already did.
Yep.
You know, she goes, you saved my bacon because I was able to get these other two things out that she had to get out. And she was good to go. I
interchange documents with people all day long. In multiple versions of Office, in Word and PowerPoint and Excel, nobody notices. Nobody knows there's a difference.
No, and they don't need to.
We've been doing that for years in the Mac world, you know, with AppleWorks and Pages and all the other programs that we have to adjust ourselves. Oh, we better save it in Word format because that's the only thing the PC people are going to know how to open.
Right. Or RTF.
Or RTF, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's an interesting world out there. You know, millions of people use OpenOffice. I really don't understand why anybody would buy a copy of Office until they've tried. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to do it right?
It's the only thing they know.
Right,
but the only thing they know, and the salesman can sell them and make a profit on that box.
Right, right. But, you know, if it's free, at least give it a try and see if it works for you. If it does, you saved anywhere between $400 and $700.
Wait, if it's free, how much are you out?
Well, exactly zero if it doesn't work for you.
I think that still equates to zero.
There's been some interesting arguments about free software and the perceived value.
Right.
If it's free, it can't be good. If they charge $10 for it, you might think it was worth more.
Right, right. I'm working with an outside group, and we sell our service very reasonably. And several people have said to me, well, shouldn't you be charging more? Otherwise, people will think it's not worth it. And I keep saying, no, it's a value proposition. Mm-hmm. Particularly in these parlous economic times, people can afford X where they couldn't necessarily afford Y.
Yep.
And why not at least give it a try? If it's only X dollars a month, give it a try. If it doesn't work for you, you've really lost nothing.
Very little.
Yeah, we've had companies tell us that. You know, usually we're competing with a large, you know, national three-letter organization that does electronic data systems. And, you know, we come in at
there are two of those, you know. There are three of those.
Yeah.
Really. And you know, we come in at a third the price, and selling Macs typically instead of PCs, and we've had large corporate customers tell us that we don't charge enough to be taken seriously. One company gave us a $10,000 retainer because that's what they spend on their PC maintenance in a month.
Right.
And we didn't spend that in a whole year.
Right.
On their Macs, and so they're accusing us of shady dealings. What do you mean you didn't spend that much? What did you do? Did you do any work? Well, one, we didn't need to do that much.
How can they accuse you of not taking their money?
Yeah, it was funny.
I'm a little confused by that.
Yeah, well, because the other company is more than happy to take $10,000 a month in maintenance costs.
I would take $10,000 a month in maintenance costs if I could do $10,000 worth of work.
Yeah.
Even $9,995, I might stretch it.
Yeah.
Doggone it. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're all sitting down. If you're driving, pull over to the curb because I have something shocking to tell you. Our first caller is Linda from Greece. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
You guys make me laugh. Merry Christmas, gentlemen.
And the same to you. Was Santa good to you?
I got more sweet money.
That was
good for me.
Santa's great to you, then.
Yeah.
I got a question. A friend of mine is afraid to call you, so I'm asking the question for her.
Oh, you know how many times we've heard that?
I have a
question
from a friend
of mine. Yeah.
She wants to buy a computer.
Sure.
I can't afford one, so it's not me. Okay. She wants to buy a computer. She has arthritis, and she can't, bring it into Dave. And she wants to know. She does online shopping. Would a laptop or a desktop be better for her? And I told her she could go to Dave, but she says, "But then, how do I get my drivers? If I go to Gateway," she says, "I can just go out," because she doesn't know too much about it.
Right. Well, there's two things. If she's not planning on taking it out anywhere, right? If she's just going to, it's always going to be at home. You tend to get more hardware on a desktop for the same amount of money that you would spend on a laptop. She pay a certain amount of money for the portability, but if she's not going to port it, then she doesn't need that. In addition, if she has arthritis, she probably wants a bigger keyboard.
Yeah.
And if she has a laptop, she'll be buying an extra keyboard anyway.
And typically laptops have smaller monitors.
Right.
With a desktop, you can get a bigger monitor for the same money and be able to see things on the screen bigger.
The only problem she said she would have is if she has to have it work done on it, she doesn't know anybody that could carry it in for her. That's her problem.
Well, that'll happen wherever you buy it.
Yeah, and we do a pickup and delivery service.
Right. And even if you buy it from the national chains, if there needs any work, you box it back up and ship it back to them.
Yeah, see, that's why she was thinking of going to a laptop. She says, because if I have to bring it in, she says, I could just carry it in.
Yeah, but then she's got to also worry about, you said she's got arthritis in that. How easy is it going to be for working on the keyboard on a small laptop?
Right.
Yeah.
And in case you missed it, Dave says he's got a pickup and delivery service.
Yeah, you know, we do.
That's good.
We also do on-site service. It's a little more expensive than bringing it in, but on-site service a lot of companies offer, and pick-up and delivery service. And there's always general couriers if a specific shop doesn't.
She was thinking of going to Best Buy and getting their service. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Well, you know what? That's entirely her choice. We always recommend buying locally in order to keep the money in the community. Both Dave and Steve have solutions for her, but only she can really make that decision.
Yeah.
Okie doke.
Okay. One question for me, Doc.
Yeah. Yeah.
Open office. I got Word 2007. Does that mean now I'm on a 60-day trial because I had 2003? Does that mean now that I won't be able to use it after January such and such?
You won't
yes.
be able to. Well, you, 2007 trial will quit working when your trial is up. And after January 11th, you will not be able to buy Office 2007
okay.
Until
all
Microsoft.
Documents, Open Office would be because I don't know too much about this stuff. So Open Office will be easy for me to use.
It should be very easy to use. It for 90% of what most people do, it's identical.
Word.
Right. And basic word processing, you know, simple typing. For a lot of people, even WordPad that comes with Windows or TextEdit that comes with the Mac is enough. They don't need anything fancier than that.
Right. Or for I know a lot of people who only ever use word processing, they use Abbey Word, which is mm-hmm. also free, also very easy to use, and very small.
And most of the things they type are their emails. And there's a word processor built into your email program.
Right. All right. We got to run, Linda.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks. You too. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day,
7
days a week
at
soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I love jazz, so I spend an outrageous amount of time listening to Jazz 90.1. It's my way to stay in the loop with the local jazz scene and the local musicians. And I love the specialty programs. They're programs that I cannot find anywhere else. With Jazz 90.1's Facebook and MySpace pages, I can listen in and stay tuned in with the local jazz scene from my computer and my phone, too. I jump in on the exclusive contests and chat up with people who believe in the music. You can, too. Visit jazz901.org and click on the icons to visit Jazz 90.1's Facebook and MySpace pages. That's how I take jazz further, with Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Greg Lefebvre. Join me every Sunday night at 7 o'clock for Doc's Juke Joint on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 21 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, guess what? Doesn't take much to get the Apple rumor mill spinning at full tilt, especially when it comes to hints and suggestions over the company's long-anticipated, never officially confirmed tablet device. While speculation has grown and peaked and subsided and grown again over the past couple of years, Apple has managed to successfully suppress any official details of the supposed tablet. However, the news that Apple has rented out a stage at the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco has generated speculation again, that Apple is gearing up to announce a tablet-like device. The report in the Financial Times blog quoted unnamed inside sources that said Apple rented the stage for several days toward the end of January in preparation for a major product announcement on January 26th, which is a Tuesday. Other recent reports, including a research note by Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster, who said that there is a 75% likelihood that Apple will have an event in January and a 50% chance that it would be held to launch the Apple tablet and 30% chance of rain, and a report in the Wall Street Journal, where you weren't even listening, which said Apple is briefing major media companies like CBS and Disney on a tablet-like device, suggesting Apple may release the device during the first quarter of 2010.
Which is actually their second fiscal quarter.
Munster suggested that an Apple tablet's operating system would resemble either the iPhone OS with multitasking and applications designed specifically to a device with a large screen, or else a multi-touch enabled version of Mac OS X. This is what makes you a consultant. Apple only makes two operating systems. We predict it will be one of them in the tablet. Wow! However, he wrote, we expect Apple to build on the multi-touch technology built into the iPhone and the iPod Touch along with the App Store ecosystem with an OS more compatible to the iPhones, not the iMacs. Apple may also integrate a mobile data feature such as the 3G wireless into the device and could even subsidize the device through a wireless carrier, Munster added. He cited the trend towards subsidized netbooks, for example, Verizon's partnership with Hewlett-Packard to carry the HP Mini 1151NR. The Apple device could also challenge Amazon's Kindle reader if Apple accompanies the device with a push to sell digital books to the iTunes store. So, the question to you, do you believe it this time? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Well, the other rumor about that event in January is, and that also goes along with Apple talking with Disney and ABC and some of the other TV networks, is a television subscription service for iTunes. Right now, you can buy individual TV shows and movies on iTunes. You can you can buy seasons ahead of time with they call their season pass. So you buy the whole season, and when the episodes come out, you get it. But they don't stream live television websites like Hulu that doesn't stream it live, but it streams television. And so there's been a lot of rumors that Apple is working with the television show studios to be able to stream TV shows on iTunes. And one of the jokes that everyone points out is that it's always ABC and Disney that Apple talks to. They happen to have some of the most popular shows on television, but they're also happen to have Steve Jobs on the board of Disney.
One other interesting tidbit, the domain name iSlate.com is owned by Apple. Now, they've owned it since 2007, so I don't quite know what that all means, but they do own iSlate.com.
And I forgot to mention from our previous story, Microsoft has said they plan on having a version of Word 2007 that doesn't violate this patent available in time to make up their January 11th deadline.
Nice.
But coding, engineering, packaging, production, that's a lot of stuff to do in a month.
Yeah.
Unless they've been doing it for the last 8 months.
Right, hopefully they should have started it when the lawsuit was filed, just in case they lost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which they probably
were. And Apple is really smart enough to do that. You know, they're and certainly capable of the contingency.
And part of the thing about the Apple tablet is it's been rumored for so long, and one of the rumors I read is that it has been available. Well, not available. It has been ready for a couple of years. They're just waiting for the price point to be able to come down.
But again,
with technology being able
to
progress fast enough.
You know what? Again, it's a lot of hype, you know, and speculation and everything else. It's just like when the iPhone, there was, you know, all these speculation that the iPhone was going to have the camera in it and all this other stuff.
And that took till the second generation to get the video camera,
And then they said, oh, the Nano was supposed to have it too. Wasn't there rumors that the Nano was
eventually the Nano did get a camera. A lot of the, and that's sort of been interesting and argued back and forth in the Mac community.
It's almost like they create the hype to see if there's going to be the
start the rumor first and then see if there's enough interest to actually develop the product.
Get a lot of porked off people.
But the rumor sites have been more accurate in the last couple of years, and especially in the last year. And some people were wondering if that's because Steve was on his medical sabbatical and not stomping on all the rumor sites. So the rumors are getting more accurate. But then what I've always said is that the rumor sites are probably accurate because who knows how many dozens of prototypes any company, including Apple, has in production or has under development what may be going to production. You know, if Apple makes a $2,000 tablet, that's not going to sell. You know, the $500 seems to be the magic price point.
Right.
And they don't the theory is they don't want to get close to the $999 price of their full laptop. So somewhere between $500 and $1,000. And then rumors about Verizon getting the iPhone, which the current iPhone cannot work on Verizon because it's a different technology. Perhaps Verizon is going to have a wireless broadband card in the Apple tablet so that you can get on the internet without needing Wi-Fi, and they might subsidize the price for the phone. So the tablet, it may be a $700, $800 tablet that you get for $500 with your two-year contract like the high-end smartphones. Mm-hmm. And all these rumors could be right.
Right.
Depending on what they're actually got in the lab.
In addition, go to slashgear.com and search for Notion Inc. and or Tegra, I guess, as well. Notion Inc. is rumored to be bringing out a tablet PC of their own that runs the Android operating system. No, you want to search for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not on the first page.
It's cool stuff on the first page.
Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff all over the place. Look, a squirrel.
where?
Well, then, and then there's the crunch
search
pad.
For Notion Inc. I-N-K, Notion Inc.
And then there's the whole mess with the crunch pad.
Which is a complete mess.
Which the TechCrunch web blog, Mike Arrington, was saying for years he wanted this cheap device to be able to surf the web and check email. And the story, you know, from his side of the story is that a developer said, well, let's work together and build this. And then a couple of weeks ago, the developer said, we're taking our tablet and leaving, and you can't have it anymore. The developer is saying, we never had any agreements, and nothing was ever signed. And they announced the Juju tablet. And they're going to sell it for $500.
Yep.
So Arrington is saying the lawsuits are flying, and Juju is going to be released soon. So
that's
the big thing. A lot of the bloggers are saying is that in this coming year, 2010, there's going to be a dozen different tablets, and a lot of the companies are waiting to see what Apple's going to do so they can do it differently.
Right.
Because they don't think they can do it better. That's been one of the big things about the Mac is it's hard to get better. You can get cheaper easily, but it's hard to get better.
Right.
Because the Apple typically uses higher quality components and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But, so a $200 tablet from a third party versus an $800 tablet from Apple.
Right. But the real question is if somebody else comes out with a $600 tablet or a $500 tablet, you know, how close is that to the quality of the hardware, and Apple wants to make more money on their operating system. So it's an interesting set of questions that are going to be coming out.
And we've seen a little of that already with the iPhone clones, the knockoff clones coming out of China that try to be an iPhone. They look like an iPhone, but they aren't.
Well, right.
They crash all the time. The product build quality isn't very
high.
On
the other hand, people are very happy with their Androids, and it's gaining in market share. So there's an interesting question about that. I have another story that I'll read later on about a tablet PC. And in fact, it's more about Notion Inc., so I'll read that later.
Have you played with Google Goggles?
I have. How cool is that? Yeah. So there's a lot of interesting stuff out there that we've got coming down the pike. And, of course, any of those companies who are listening, I'd be glad to review any of them for
you. A lot of people are expecting CES this year to be really cool.
I want to go to CES so badly.
The big problem with CES is it's the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Is, you know, you got all these really, really cool things that aren't coming out until next Christmas.
Right. Well, and that's kind of what we expect.
Yep. So it's really fun. And that's January 7th through 10th.
Right.
So if you're interested in what's coming next in consumer electronics, it's a really neat way to go.
Yeah, I was wondering how many folks though out there got any of the little netbooks, you know, as a Christmas gift.
I know. Call us and tell us what you got. We want to know what you got and how you like it.
And that's one thing a tablet's going to have to compete against is a netbook with a keyboard we're all familiar with using.
Right. I have a netbook right here, and it's perfectly sized for, surfing general real work and still being tiny and
it's
easily
doable.
Usable.
It's got the speed, and, you know, I mean, you can do it. Granted, you're not going to do gaming, but that's not what it's meant for.
And neither are the tablets going to let you do gaming.
Yeah, but if you know right up front, you know, it's going to do your word processing, you can surf the internet, and you can get your emails, and, you know.
And that's really all I do on this, and it's perfect for
affordability to, have something that's very lightweight, you know, instead of tugging around this huge computer. But there are offshoots. I mean, you've got, yes, a smaller keyboard. Yes, a smaller screen. You know, it's like, what do you want? One or the other.
Right. All right, I have an email question. We do take email questions at our website. You can go to our website and click on the link and send us an email question. And Donville from Hilton writes, I can't find mtech86.com or mtech with a K or a CH for the memory test online. How do you spell it? Don, it's memtest86. Memtest, short for memory test. memtest86.com. Memory test. memtest86.com. And there was a link that Steve put up on our website. So if you go to that, you'll be able to download the memory testing software from Brady Tech Inc. So that was easy
we
enough.
You must learn to enunciate.
Memtech86.com. Is this a memtech86.com I see before me?
No, it's a memtest86.com.
I know. That's I got that. Yeah, memtest86.com, M-E-M-T-E-S-T-86, short for memory test. And if you can't remember that, you can always check the link from last week.
And if you don't want to download the ISO and burn your own disk, they will happily sell you a pre-burned disk.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's very nice, isn't it, of them? That's very sweet. They're
but
good
what
people.
What do they charge them?
$10.
That's cheap and half the price.
Plus $1 shipping.
Yeah, it's still not bad.
No, it's not. And they pack a lot into that. Now, when you run
that's
that
more
test,
than Dave's CD that he burns for you.
That's right. When Dave's selling it, way cheaper than that. The thing to know about MemTest 86 is it takes a long time to do it right. Okay?
Days.
It can take days. But the point is, you may have one of those flaky memory chips that only flakes out in certain memory configurations or at a certain heat or whatever, whatever. So you want to run, it runs many, many tests over and over and over again. And I promise you, if there is a problem with your RAM, this will find it. I know a lot of geeks who buy RAM from wherever, and then the first thing they do is just run MemTest 86 on the thing for about 3 or 4 days.
One word of caution, though, I'd like to tell all the folks out there, or at least remind them. I mean, I'm sure numerous folks that got laptops for, you know, Christmas gifts, whether it be the college student just going back to school, because I sold a couple there. I more or less do it as a service for my my clients, but a lot of these other laptop manufacturers have it built in that you've got to burn your own backup CDs.
First
or
thing
DVDs.
You do.
Please, folks, take the time and the effort to go out, get even a 25-pack of DVDs, because that's what they all are now, and burn your backup DVDs and tuck them away. Don't even give them to the student, because sure as God made green little apples, they will lose it and say, oh, I don't know where it is. And then you bring it in and say, they lost the DVDs.
I remember CompUSA selling a Windows 98 recovery pack, you know, back in 98. And it was a box of 50 blank disks. Blank floppies.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So the first thing you do is back up everything. Because when you bring your computer in for service, the first thing Dave or I or any service department is going to ask is, we need your disks.
Yeah. I don't know where they are. Or I never got around to making them. And then they get ticked off.
Well, now you're going to have to buy new ones.
Or
and the time to find all the drivers.
I had one client get upset with me because I quoted her a certain price to get the machine back up and running. I says, bring in your disk and I'll do it for this. Well, she calls a couple hours later and says, well, I can't find them. What am I going to do? I says, well, it'll take me a little more time, charge you an extra half hour, but I've got to go to the internet and find all your disk.
Right. All your drivers.
All your drivers. And I also burned them to a CD.
To make it easier for the next guy.
She was still porked.
People are unreasonable. Some people are simply unreasonable.
Well, you've got all that right there. Yeah, I've got the internet, but it's still, I can't download it onto your machine because, I can't even connect to the internet because you don't have the network drivers. I go out, look for it, put it all on the DVD, which I give back to you.
And sometimes it's terrible detective work figuring out which card is in that machine
and,
to know what drivers
to
get.
And to try to find the latest version. Yes, yep. I can do searches and, they'll get me to the original ones that came out, say, in 2007.
Right. Or 2002.
Yeah, or, I'll go back and try to find the latest ones for you.
Right.
I don't just, you know. So, yeah, it does eat up some of our time. And I didn't think being a half hour was unreasonable, given that you got to find the motherboards, the sound cards, the network drivers, the video cards, and everything else. And trying to find the correct ones, burn them to a CD or a DVD, depending, most of the time it's a CD. And they walk away with that, too.
That is one advantage of buying a name brand PC, is you go to their website and they've already collected the drivers for you.
But
and quite often you can buy a disc directly from them with everything on it. But you get the original disc.
Yeah, you get the originals. Like you can go to Dell. Yeah, yep. In Dell you can put their service number in there. It'll take you to what it came with originally.
Right. Then you have to load all the updates.
And then you turn around and then put on Service Pack 3 for them, which most of them are running XP. You put that on, and then after even you put Service Pack 3 on, there's still I think 89 updates after that.
And we just charge it for time on the bench. It may take hours to download this stuff. You know, we click download and go away.
Yeah. Right. We're not working on it. You know, it's one of those darned if you do and darned if you don't.
Well, people get unreasonable about their computers. I mean, they can't help it. It's their stuff, and they want it to work right now. And I get that. I really do.
And you get so hooked on it, you can't live an hour without your email.
Right.
Yep. Or the ones I always hate are the business users. You know, I run my whole business on that computer. Where's your backup computer in case this one goes down? Which it did.
It's your business.
Right, I can't live without it. Well, you're going to have to while it's being repaired.
Well, exactly right. All right, we're going to take another break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with the longest running show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 No. Oh, my golly, Ned. Member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
Meet the faces of influenza, groups who should be immunized every year.
I have a chronic medical condition.
Asthma.
Pregnant during influenza season.
We live with a baby under 6 months old.
In the group 6 months through 18 years.
Age 50 or older.
Care for someone at risk.
I'm Christy Yamaguchi. See your healthcare provider about getting vaccinated. It's a safe and effective way to prevent influenza. Visit facesofinfluenza.org.
This message addresses seasonal influenza, a public service from the American Lung Association.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
If you own or run a business, consider promoting your business on Jazz 90.1 through underwriting. When you underwrite the programming on Jazz 90.1, you join with our members in supporting great jazz radio. With a few tasteful statements about your business, thousands of Jazz 90.1 listeners will know who you are, how to reach you, and that you care about great jazz programming. Underwriting is easy and very reasonable. It's good business to do business with Jazz 90.1. For more information on our great underwriting packages, please contact Station Manager Rob Linton at 585-966-2660. That's 966-2660 or email sales@jazz901.org.
Hi, this is Otto Bruno. Join me every Sunday afternoon from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Let's talk a little more about Notion Inc. It's a startup in Hyderabad, India. They've developed a touchscreen tablet PC running the Android OS. The company with development teams in Taiwan, the U.S., and India aims to target the global market. The device, built around an as yet unnamed Tegra system on a chip from NVIDIA, can also double up as an e-reader. The computer uses low-power 10.1-inch screens from Pixel QI, which develops screens that can be read in both ambient light and sunlight. The product will be on display at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas in January. Hey, Rob, how about sending us to the Consumer Electronics Show this year? The company is keeping the name of the product under wraps ahead of the show. Notion Inc. decided to use Android because it lets the device take advantage of applications developed by the open source community. Although Android is not designed specifically for large devices with large screens, Notion Inc. has developed a software wrapper around it to support the Pixel Key screen. A software development kit for third-party developers is scheduled to be released next year. The company has decided to develop an e-reader for the device, which it will offer for free to customers. It claims that its user interface will be the main differentiator from other Android-based tablet computers that are expected on the market. The company will not display the interface at CES. The product is targeted at both business users and tech-savvy users. The company decided to develop office applications on its own, as office applications are the first applications business users look for. The product, which is expected to cost less than $400 U.S., will be sold through telecommunications service providers. Notion Inc. is already in talks with some service providers, some of whom are likely to subsidize the price of the product. The device, which is said to weigh 1.7 pounds, supports Wi-Fi and 3G wireless technologies. It has a gigabyte of main memory with an option of 16 or 32 gigabytes of flash drive. The device uses rechargeable lithium-ion batteries, can be charged through a USB link from a computer system or via a power adapter. Notion Inc. did not comment on a date for shipping the product, saying it depends on the availability of the version of the Tegra chip it is using. So our question to you, does this sound better than the Apple tablet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 1-800-790-0415, just like Kevin did from Greece, New York. Welcome, Kevin. What's your question?
Well, I had a question regarding backup software for a network. I'm looking at putting an external drive into a network and was wondering what software is out there to handle, you know, full and incremental backups.
Cobain will do it. You can set up with them to do both. Well, that matter of fact, that's what I do. I did a full one on my server because I've got a Buffalo drive that just hangs off. And it does, after it did the full, it does incremental. And it's a free product.
Well, that's nice. Okay. Retrospect is one of the granddaddies in the Mac and the Windows world, but that's quite expensive for a network backup.
Well, obviously I was hoping to find a free one.
Well, Cobain is free, and it actually works pretty well. There's a lot of buzz on the net about it. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, we've been using it for a while, and like I say, it works fantastic.
And a lot of times, you can use just any single backup software on the computer pointing to that network drive, but a network backup program runs on one computer, backs up all of the other computers to that network drive, so you get a central
and that's
management.
What I was looking.
Well,
yeah.
See, what I usually tend to do is instead of, I like, and we've done this for a couple companies, is we put a Buffalo drive out there. And that's where we point everybody's documents and everything else to the Buffalo drive. Now, along with the Buffalo drive.
Buffalo is just a brand of network-attached storage.
It's a network-attached storage. Then I also have them get two USB drives, external USB drives. They're inexpensive and everything else. And they rotate between those two doing backups of the Buffalo drive. So, you know, worst case scenario, they're, you know, and they rotate it, and they're covered.
I should mention, however, that it is not Cobain. It's Cobian.
Cobian.
Cobain is Kurt Cobain. You've got him on the head. This is Luis Cobian of Cobiansoft, who actually wrote.
Well, this one I can blame on Dan because he's the one, like I say, he's set it up a couple times. I haven't. And because we just started using it within the past month or so. And he found it, like I say, and it was free. And he goes, I think it's Cobain. Okay.
Nah, it's Cobian.
And that's from Switzerland, isn't it? .se is Switzerland?
Yeah.
And how do you spell Cobian or Cobain or
C-O-B-I-A-N.
Cobian.
And Dave will
there it is.
Steve will put up a link. There's
thank
already a link
much.
There.
Yep.
Cobian backup
it's,
is the name of the
twice.
Product.
See, I would have put it as C-O-B-A-I-N.
Right, and you would have been
wrong.
Very wrong.
Yeah, I would. I admit it. Yep.
There you go. It's Cobian from Luis Cobian.
But all I can tell you is it works great and it's free and. I said, we've been using it for over a month and a half, and it's been fantastic.
Great. Thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. It's good to know that there is. Now we're going to have to start berating people because there's no excuse anymore. If you can download good, free, set it and forget it backup software,
mm-hmm.
then we can't take an excuse anymore. I meant to do it. I was going to do it. If you can take this and set it up
they
in about 5 minutes.
They'll sit there and say they're rearranging their sock drawer. You know,
well, I still, the one poor woman came into our store. She had bought her backup drive. She had sat down. She made the mistake of reading the instructions before she plugged everything in, and then her main hard drive failed. If she'd have just plugged it in and backed it up, she would have had everything. But, yeah, so the computer knew it was about to get backed up, and mm-hmm. you just for spite failed while she was hooking up her backup drive.
Right. Now, Cobian version 8, Cobian backup 8, is free. Cobian version 9 is not free. So make sure you download version 8 in order to get the free version.
That easy. You know, I mean, we're coming up with a lot of stuff. Because folks will sit there and say, well, how good can AVG and all these other products be that you're recommending them? And gee, it's funny. Since we've done that, even a few other well-known folks like Kim Commando and them, all of a sudden they're copying us and recommending those. And we've been recommending them for months. But, you know, it's...
Kim, are you listening?
You
don't call in?
Yeah, I mean... Where's her loyalty? We've been on the air longer than she has.
We'd have her as a guest on our show. We'd be delighted to do that. We'd be honored to do that, as in point of fact.
That doesn't look quite accurate, Nick. Version 8 is open source. Version 9 is not open source, but it still looks like it's free.
Oh, maybe it is.
They have a donation button, but
there you go.
It's free, just not open source.
Oh, there you go. All right. So it's free, but not open source. If you're one of those people who... if you're RMS, you want, if you're Richard M. Stallman, you want version 8, and for everybody else, version 9 would be fine.
Well, some folks, so like I was saying, though, you know, feel this compulsion that they got to pay for stuff. I mean, yes, you can, on some of these, pay for the full version, but the reason, you know, because they go, well, how good can free be? Well, the freebie is hoping that you're going to buy, because that's usually one part of their whole package. And, you know, by taking this one part out that we recommend using this or this, it's only part of the package. And yes, you can buy the full package if you want to lay out the money.
Right. And in addition, not everybody is motivated by money.
Right. And most of the time with the free versions, what you pay for is tech support. So if you want to call them with a question, that's when you buy the commercial version, typically.
Right. Or with things like OpenOffice, it's free, but you can buy that tech support that you want from their professional tech support organization. So you don't have to necessarily lose anything in the bargain. As you get the free software, great. But if you're the sort of person who feels they need that safety net, or you're a small or even a large organization and you want that professional support, then you can buy that from the company.
Exactly. If that gets you the warm fuzzy that, you know, yes, I've got the research. Well, it also, in buying the paid version of some of these programs, it will do it automatically. Whereas some of them that, you know, we recommend right now, you know, you've got to go in and do it.
And
some folks don't want that hassle, and that's where you can turn around and pay for the full version, and it'll do it automatically for you.
And typically with these smaller programs, you're paying the author directly. What usually happens in commercial software publishing is a team of people write a program that goes through marketing, that goes through publication, that goes through distribution, that goes to resellers, that goes to a customer, and everybody takes a cut along the way. So that $100 program you buy, the guy that wrote it gets maybe $5.
Yeah.
So, and that's the motivation for a lot of what we call shareware authors, where they write something cool, charge $20 for it. They're making more than they would have if they wrote it for a commercial publisher.
Oh, speaking of shareware and all that, you know who I ran into?
No.
Mr. Paul Casarino.
Dr. Casarino.
What a great guy.
Shareware gems.
Yes.
I know. I need to call him. I'm horribly bad at that.
Run into him. He's still doing good in that. You know, it's kind of reminiscing, you know. I mean, his kids and I. For you folks that don't know or, you know, new to this show, back in the day, when, you know, the internet was literally just, you know, a 300 baud modem, or 1200 baud in my case, to cut down the phone bill or cut my neck. He used to run at the PC Cube user group the software library. And what it was is if you wanted certain utilities, you just couldn't go to the internet and get them. It just wasn't available. And Paul literally had this whole library of disk, and you turned in a blank disk and tell him what programs you want, and he would put them on those disks for you. And it was.
And he also ran the BBS, where he had like 20 CD drives connected to the thing, each one with a different set of software on it.
It was unbelievable. I mean, the stuff that was up there and the way we used to do things compared to today's method, a lot of folks sit there and would look at us and go, get out. I can't be bothered with that, but that was the way you did it back then.
Paul is a great guy.
Yeah. Said to say hello.
Okay. Hi to Paul. Yeah. We love Paul. All right. Bill from Fairport wrote to us at our website and said the machine, he made the mistake of doing a BIOS update from Gateway after installing Windows 7. The machine is a quad core with 8 gigs of RAM, and I have been really happy with it, you think? The only change that the update made was to set the CPU fan to full speed all the time. Must have had some heat problems that I haven't seen. Now the thing whirs nonstop and can't be changed in setup. I'm trying to find a way to install the original BIOS and found the file, but got an error when trying to run it. Support was not willing to help because the machine is working fine. I've considered installing the original Vista on another hard drive and attempting to install the old BIOS from Vista, thinking that the reason that the file won't install because it's not compatible with 7. Is that a reasonable thought, or have you got a better idea? Well, a couple of things here, Bill. First, probably the reason the old BIOS won't install because it knows there's a newer and better BIOS already on the motherboard, so you got to give that idea up. And here's the other thing.
It won't go backwards.
The reason that they did an update is because there was something bad going on in your machine with the fan. If indeed the machine is running hot and the BIOS update fixed that by now running the fan all the time, all you would accomplish by loading the old BIOS is to make your machine die young.
Or I have a question on that, though, is maybe there's a short in the fan. I mean...
Possible, but if it's
one of the thermal sensors,
if it's
a
short in the fan, it should have happened even with the old BIOS. But if there's a problem with the thermal sensor, then that the new BIOS might.
I mean, you might
want to
have that taken a look at too, because I mean, it's a. Well, you've seen some of the pictures, you know, we've got it on our website, and I'm sure you run into it too, Steve. We open up those cases, and all the fins around the CPU are totally plugged. I mean, they are totally jammed up with dust, dirt, and everything else, along with, you know, residue on the fins that you can't even see remotely how the thing even gets cooled.
Right.
That we take it outside.
And the answer is, it doesn't get cooled.
Yeah, right. We got an inline thing, because we just don't take a regular compressor and just blow it out because there's moisture. We got an inline filter that filters that out.
Right.
But we take them outside and blow them out, and... The birds love us.
Sure.
Because all the dust in it that's blowing out of these computers, they love it for nesting material.
Right. All right, look, Bill, the reality is you bought a quad-core 8-gig RAM machine and don't expect the fan to run? I'm sorry, that's a tad unreasonable. The reality is that thing throws out a massive amount of heat, and if the BIOS wasn't running the fan all the time, then that's why they did the update, because they really needed the fan to be running to keep the machine cool. Now, there are some things you can do. You can change out the fan in the case for a more whisper quiet fan. That might help. Maybe that particular case, you can add more fans to it.
Yeah, that can be a big issue. How many fans are there? One of the big things we had in the Mac world is that there was a PowerMac.
No fans.
Well, originally, no fans. Jobs wanted no noise. But there was the PowerMac G4 that got nicknamed the Wind Tunnel. It had one giant fan in it that had to cool everything, the processor, the graphics cards, the hard drives. So it ran really, really fast and really, really loud. And then when Apple came out with the PowerMac G5 model, there were 9 fans in it. They were smaller and more directed into thermal zones, so you barely heard they were on.
Right.
So if your PC tower has one giant fan in it, it has to travel fast and loud to circulate enough air.
Right. So you might find that buying a new case with multiple fans on the side, fans on the front, fans on the top, fans on the back.
Fan for the CPU, fan for the graphics card, fan for the other cards, fan for the hard drives, fans for the optical drives.
Now you got to make sure that your motherboard will fit in there and that all those fans will have places. Soundbites fans. We have lots of them on Facebook.
I saw a neat chassis once. It was a 5 1/4 inch bay chassis, so it fit in your optical drive bay. But you put your 3 1/2 inch hard drive in it, and it had a row of fans on the side. And so that was pretty neat to keep
remember
it cool.
Remember the liquid cooled ones?
Sure.
You could sit there and see.
Watch the fluid circulating, yep.
Fluids all circulating around because they literally had water-cooled jets pumping cool water around your whole system.
And there are ones now that don't use water because water is a little dangerous to run around your computer system. They use use other things.
A non-conductive transparent fluid.
Right.
The scariest thing I saw once is I forget the name of the chemical, but they had this clear aquarium filled with this non-conducting transparent fluid, looked exactly like water. They threw a computer in it.
Yep.
And the computer, they use it to find cold solder joint, because it has a very low boiling point. So where the little tiny bubbles started coming off of it, well, there's your bad solder joint.
Yeah, very nice.
And it was non-conductive, so the computer could stay running when it was in the tub.
I'm sorry.
But it just scared the willies out of you.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to fish that one out.
They had don't try this at home all over, flashing all over the screen.
Yeah, I bet.
And this is not water.
And it's an interesting problem. You want the fastest, most powerful machine you can get, but you don't want a lot of noise. I completely understand that. In my office at work, there's 15 computers on all the time, and the noise would drive me crazy if I had decent hearing. So you've got to be aware of that difference, and you've got to be aware of the fact that if you're going to have a high-end machine, you're going to have heat. You got to dissipate it. All right, we're going to take a break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes. We're going to have a lot more of your questions. We're going to have a lot more news items, and we will have Uncle Dave's Story Hour. That'll be coming up in the next hour. So don't go away. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and we are Sound Bites, and we are right here, contrary to my opinion, we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1 at the end of 2009, moving on to 2010. We'll see you in just a couple of minutes on the other side of this charming little underwriter break.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Army Specialist Andrew Pike became paralyzed while serving in Iraq.
My injury was a gunshot wound to the left abdomen from a sniper. My first contact with paralyzed veterans was in Walter Reed.
Paralyzed veterans and National Service Officer Michael Killen.
We try to reassure them what benefits are out there, try to educate them and take some of that stress away from them.
Right now I'm going back to school to earn a degree, and I'm just spending time with my wife and child.
You can help our paralyzed veterans. Visit pva.org.
When you underwrite the programming of Jazz 90.1, you make your business known to people who enjoy jazz as much as you do. Your on-air message is short and tasteful, making it easy to remember, with basic information about your business, including how to reach you. Underwriting is economical, too. To find out more about underwriting Jazz 90.1, call 966-2660. That's 966-2660.
Finally!
Honey, they had 34 shades of white paint. Come on, it was a tough decision.
So what did you get?
Ultra Premium Puffy Cloud White.
And that'll match?
I have no idea. There's another can in the car. I just want to sit for a sec.
Are you okay?
Two out of three people with diabetes die of a heart attack or stroke. But you can lower the risk. Ask your healthcare provider how. For more info, go to diabetesactnow.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, Roy, could you use a tax deduction?
What do you mean, Roy? My name's Jack.
Well, come here, Jack, and get groovy. You need a tax deduction?
I'm not sure. Tell me more.
Well, when you donate to Jazz 90.1, you get a tax deduction, while at the same time you are supporting the great jazz programming you love. You can call 966-JAZZ or go online to jazz901.org. But you have to donate before the end of the year to get the deduction for 2009.
I'm going to jazz901.org and make a tax-deductible donation right now.
Well, go, Jack, go!
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, before I read the news, if anybody from Interlock is listening in, give me an email. Drop me an email. I want to talk about it. All right.
Interlock?
Interlock, yes. It's a multidisciplinary workshop and hackerspace. I don't know anything else about it. It's right here in Rochester, and I want to know more about it, so I want them to call me. Email me, actually. Yeah. All right. BlackBerry handset users experienced email and internet outages on the evening of December 22nd and into the early morning hours of the 23rd. It was RIM's second major service failure in a week. The outage lasted more than 8 hours, and RIM, in an email to customers, estimated that at one point 100% of its customers in North America were affected. BlackBerry subscribers may be unable to send or receive messages. Subscribers may also be unable to register their device, roam in another location, or use other services such as internet browsing, RIM said in the email, which didn't get to customers for many, many hours because they were blacked out. BlackBerry Internet Service subscribers may be unable to use the BlackBerry Internet Service website or perform activities such as creating new accounts, integrating third-party email accounts, or viewing email attachments. Services resumed just before 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, although long after Twitter users had announced the issue and duly logged their complaints, a phenomenon surely keeping brand managers awake at night. The morning of December 23rd, Twitter users tweeted their relief at RIM's return. Thank God BlackBerry is up and running again, one Twitter user wrote. So glad I got a droid. Missed the BlackBerry outage this time, wrote another. There were similar messages for iPhone users. BlackBerry customers also experienced an email outage on December 17th, which was said to be due to a service upgrade. That outage reportedly did little to disrupt consumers' opinions of the brand. So do you own a BlackBerry? Were you lost? Did you feel abandoned? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. I know that no matter what you may think of the Droid or the iPhone, the people who really live on their computers, who really live on their little devices, are the BlackBerry, or as we think of them, CrackBerry users. They are grafted. If they could get the thing built into their arm, they would be happier, just so that they would never have to even put it down.
Oh, that'll be coming soon.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. Mm-hmm. It's a device that people just cannot get rid of. You know, they can't put it down. They're always looking at it. They're always checking it for email.
It's like another appendage.
It's Christmas freaking day. Put it away.
It's like another appendage.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, I've seen so many folks. It's like if it gets too far away from them, they almost go into a cold sweat.
Yeah.
Go ahead. The other thing I heard about BlackBerry this week is that Verizon-based BlackBerries had their default web search engine changed on them to Bing, and all the other web search engines have now disappeared from the menu.
Interesting.
You can still go to that website of whatever search engine you want and search yourself, but there's an auto search button.
Shouldn't there be some form of antitrust suit that's being brewed even at this moment?
It's a partnership with Verizon and Microsoft, and the consumers are in the way.
Yeah, and the consumers are in the way. Absolutely. I'll tell you what, let's talk about addiction. My daughter has sucked my wife into Farmville on Facebook. Holy mother of pearl. I'm going to get a call from my wife. I'll be sleeping on the couch tonight. Dave or Steve, I may be at your house later on with a blanket and a pillow.
I got a spare room.
Thank you. And they're the two of them and my sister-in-law, who's the third one of the unholy trio, are conspiring together. I'll give you a sheep, give me a horse, help me plow this, help me, who can I give something to that I'll get the ribbon? And you know what, I spend a lot of time on my computer, but
well, it's that is an interesting business plan. It's a virtual farm. You give them real money to get virtual plants and virtual tractors and virtual animals.
My family's spending actual cash money on this? Nobody told me that.
To buy some of the extra stuff, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to have some words.
And I've also heard that Farm Town is better than Farmville.
Shut up.
Another one.
Cut his mic.
And then there's Mafia
now.
Wars.
No, we're not doing Mafia Wars.
I don't go on Facebook anymore. I get hundreds of messages a day from my friends saying, join this cause and join this Mafia War or Zombie Wars or Farm whatever.
I just ignore them. I ignore them as well.
Well, and these are my friends that I did say
often
you can be
not.
My friend.
Often they're
well,
not.
Yeah,
what
yeah, I get those. Is, you know, someone wants to follow you. You know.
No, but you also, what happens is when you sign on, and this is why I won't sign on for any
yeah,
of them.
Yeah, there's a new, I guess
there's the reason I won't sign on for any of them is when you sign on, they say, do you want to have, you know, we need access to all your contacts and everything else. I've berated friends of mine for sending me these things, and they say, well, I didn't send it. I don't know where it came from. Well, now we know where
there
it came
is,
from. So that's why I don't do that, and I will always ignore those things.
There was a big privacy brouhaha on Facebook. Jason Calacanis was one of the most vehement bloggers about it. Facebook recently changed their privacy policy.
Right.
And if you have never set your privacy policy preferences, which most average Facebook users have not done, the default policy is to publish all of your personal information to everyone on Facebook. Your names, addresses, your friends, your email addresses, your income, everything you've put into Facebook became public information. And so celebrities were hit by it as well, where everyone could now look up their favorite celebrities' private information, because the default is to make everything public. So everyone should go to Facebook, go to the privacy policy, read all of those screens. Don't just Facebook is banking, everyone's just going to click OK.
Right.
You have to read those screens and set your policies to protect your privacy.
I can only hope that my entire family is now running to their various computers.
Yeah.
Your family listens to the show?
This week, my wife's not at market today.
I can't get my family to listen to the show.
My wife's not at market today, so the theory is she's napping, but she may actually be listening to the show.
Except
I hope
when
she's
Dave...
now sitting at her computer doing the Farmville fix-up.
When Dave said he was bringing rum balls next week, I got a earful from my wife, where are the rum balls? He didn't bring them in yet. He said he did on the air. No, he didn't.
He
said he was making them. He was going to bring them. No, I heard he said he was bringing them. Give me the rum balls. So I actually didn't get any of them that I took home. Shirley ate them all.
All right, our next caller, before Steve gets in, even maybe you'll be sleeping on my couch.
Yeah.
Our next caller is Tom from Avon. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Well, I was kind of wondering about... building a gaming machine, you know, a desktop.
Right.
And my budget's around, I could even go $3,500. And I'm just trying to do a really good one.
You can build three really good ones for that price.
Well, no, you could spend $1,500 on a video card.
That's very true. You really could.
Alienware has been the typical high-end gaming computer for a very long time. They got bought by Dell, and we were worried.
But building your own is really fun. Building it myself.
Yeah.
Well, then you just go with a good MSI motherboard. You go with at least a 1 gig NVIDIA graphics card, 8 gig of memory, a DVD burner. I mean, the sound nowadays on most motherboards, especially MSI and Gigabyte and all that, is a Sound Blaster AUG-2. Which is a darn good sound, unless, you know, you got to have, surround sounds.
No,
which gaming computers you do.
That'll work sufficiently. And, I mean, that's a key thing. And I'd say a 42-in-1 card reader and then a 30-inch screen.
And get a huge hard drive.
Yeah, terabyte.
I mean, terabytes now.
And then a second one for backup. One of the
he gets an external. He
gets
external
download Cobian. You're on your way.
One of the Twit broadcasts did an ultimate gaming machine.
Hold on. 50-inch screen.
I'm sorry, I could not hear you. Could you repeat that, please, Tom?
I already have a 50-inch screen that
I'm using.
Well, there you go.
Well, if that's a television, televisions have much, much lower quality than monitors. So you're probably only running that television at 1,000 lines. A typical 30-inch monitor is 2,000 lines.
Oh.
Serious gamer.
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't use a television for gaming.
And you want to make sure that the monitor you buy has really, really low latency. Because one of the problems that you have is how long it takes the pixels when you turn them on and then turn them off, how long it takes them to fade away. That's called latency, and the longer it takes, the more you get ghosting on the screen as things move around. Now, that's not really noticeable or really a big problem if you're talking about a television. But when you're doing gaming and you're running at a very high frame rate, that can cause some real annoyances.
Okay, so what kind of rates should I look for?
Well, you run a high contrast. 800 to 1 is a minimum, I would say.
Yeah.
And you want a low latency down in the 25 millisecond range or less.
Especially on an LCD, which are, as Nick said, you get this ghosting image. That's one place where CRTs give you much better quality.
For gaming, particularly.
For gaming,
yes.
Particularly, yeah, but they're physically huge. Especially if you want a big screen.
Right.
Yeah, I've got room for, you know, big. So.
Yeah. So that's the way you want to do it. And, yeah, a budget of around $3,500 if you're going to get a giant, very high-quality screen and stuff like that, that's exactly where you want to be.
But what about the processor, the video card?
Get a 3 gigahertz quad processor board. As Steve said, you can spend $1,500 just on the video card. NVIDIA is an exceptional product. So is ATI. Either one would be fine. The big thing to do is look at the games you want to play.
Okay.
And take a look at the specs for them. Some of them will say, you know, requires NVIDIA or ATR card of this quality. So read those first. Do your research at that end first, and then buy a system that meets as many of those requirements as you possibly can.
Okay.
Yeah. Got it?
This Week in Tech did a Ultimate Gaming Machine where their listeners voted on all the different pieces to put together, and they did a 4.4 overclocked Intel Core 2 Extreme. They spent about $10,000 putting the system together. Twin 30-inch monitors. I think they had 4 SLI video cards, 2 driving each monitor.
Nice.
So it's so they were spending Leo's money, so they
care. Yeah, right. But he can certainly get some hints from that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, our next caller, Ed from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Yes, gentlemen, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you.
And the same to you.
I was, forgive me now, I'm doing this from memory. I was at the library yesterday, and I'm one of those cheapos that use the email for, you know,
sure.
Normally, the attachments, you just click and bang, they come right down. And it's the same person usually sends them to me. This happened a couple times before. When you click on it, and there's a pop-up that comes up, and it says something to the effect that you want to save or stop or send or cancel, and they say, go ahead, do it. And you see the little, you know, bars going across,
sure,
the thing flying. And then another pop-up will come up, and it'll say, this is where you got to forgive me. I don't remember the exact verbiage. It says something about is blocked. You have to call your administrator to get in. And so I did. She came over and she played around with it for a while. And the only thing, conclusion she could come to was that it was one of these forward emails. It was like an Amber type of, have you seen this kid? Send it to 2 other people, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
The only thing she could figure was that it ran out of memory. But there's a qualifier. About a month ago, you could get on the regular computer and say you wanted to see a program from, say, an old NBC program, say, of The Office.
Right.
So you'd do the same thing, pull it up, and then you'd get the same pop-up that said Adobe was trying to open it and it couldn't. So I reported it, and they said, oh, well, we'll fix that. So strangely enough, you could go to their wireless, and it would work. But on the regular computers,
well, they probably got, okay,
Ed,
here's the thing. There are a dozen reasons something like that could be blocked,
mm-hmm,
but the number one reason is because there's a virus in it.
Mm. Yeah.
Many, many of these pass this on things are actually bogus and are viruses. I hate to say it because I'm a huge believer in the Amber Alert system, but most of the stuff that you get via email is either just simply bogus or, in addition to being bogus, contains a virus. So I'm afraid I have to be honest with you, although I contribute to the Amber system and I believe in the Amber system, mm-hmm. I toss every one of those automatically. I never even see them anymore because 99% of them are viruses and I get my information from the website. So I just ignore. And my suggestion to you is if you get one, throw it away. Don't even bother to open it. If you really want to know what's going on with the Amber Alert system, go to the website. Don't read the emails because most of them are fake.
So if it's blocked, that's protecting...
Yes, it's protecting right. it's you, probably it's protecting
blocked.
Their system.
It's probably blocked yeah. by their filtering software at the higher up than the librarian knew about.
Gosh, that's excellent. Oh, hey, thanks a lot. I'll tell her that. Appreciate it.
There you go.
Have a good year.
And
sometimes, even on those real messages, the forwards of the forwards of the forwards of the forwards get messed up, and the thing that was supposed to be forwarded originally never keeps attached.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen where you get like 10 or 12 of them, and then there's no attachment. I don't know what I'm looking at. Let me just say before we go any farther, let me just say two things. First, seriously, folks, 99% of those are fake. If you really want to know what's going on with any of those things, please go directly to the legitimate website and look there. If it's that important to you, take the half a second to bookmark the site and go there for real. Type it in, bookmark it after you know you're at the real site, and then use it. Don't bother with these emails. And for God's sake, if you're going to put me on any of these lists, don't put me in the 2 line. Put me in the BCC line where nobody can see my email address. Stop sending people my email address. And, I don't like it. Oh, my God, I'm so screwed.
The third thing is... remove all of the forwards of the forwards of the forwards of the forwards. You don't need to include all of that, which often include hundreds of other email addresses that those people, I'm sure, don't want publicly added to the robots.
Well, in addition, if it's a picture or half a dozen cute puppy pictures, now you've sent me that picture 42 times. I don't want it.
And I've probably already seen it.
Right. All right, dun, our dun, next dun, caller. Dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, oh, I'm sorry, we have to go to break?
First, yeah.
Yes, we do.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you as I postpone my final and complete doom for just another couple of seconds. We'll be back on the other side. At least Dave and Steve will. I don't know about me. Back in just a couple of minutes with the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and that's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show. Sound bites. The answer to your computer questions on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Once upon a time, old Scrooge sat down before the fire.
Ah, humbug.
With great astonishment, Marley's ghost came through the heavy door and passed into the room.
Oh. What do you want with me?
You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
I'd rather not.
To read A Christmas Carol and other books online, go to www.read.gov. Explore new worlds. Read. Brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Here's what people are saying about Jazz 90.1.
I'm really enjoying your program tonight. Thank you so much for playing live jazz on the radio.
I'm an old jitterbug lady, now 83, who still enjoys all that great music.
I want to thank you for supporting local talent.
What you do is great, man. I really think you got a good station. I am so glad that Progressive Radio is still alive. Progressive Radio lives, and God bless you.
Hi, I'm ecstatic that Soundbite founded a home on Jazz. I thank you, and I love you guys.
Hi, I'm listening to your station tonight, and it's absolutely fantastic. The string of songs you're playing are absolutely great.
I enjoy all of your hosts.
Enjoy your station a great deal. It's really cool. I think your jazz station is one of the best I've ever heard. It's really great.
I finally found a station, and I like their music, and I hope you never go out of business.
This is station manager Rob Linton. Thank you to all of our members and listeners for supporting great jazz radio, Jazz 90.1.
Hello, this is Paul Conley. Join me early on Monday mornings from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
For the time being.
For the moment.
Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, this may be the end of my radio career.
Hey, you know, it's been a great 20 years, Nick.
It has been. Nice knowing you guys. Our next caller is Elaine from Rochester, New York. Hi, honey.
Farmer Elaine.
Farmer
Elaine. You're just jealous because I have chickens and an alien cow, and you don't.
Wow, you got
if
the
I
alien.
If I had any pigs, you'd be sleeping with them tonight.
All right.
What's interesting is that real farmers are a dying. Yeah, real farmer.
The inevitable.
Yeah. Yeah. Real farmers are a dying breed, but we'll spend hours on our computer fake farming.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all right. In between playing solitaire.
In between all your games, please remember to go into Facebook and set your privacy settings.
I did.
All right, good.
I did it before you even yelled at me on the air.
I didn't yell at you on the air, honey. And I believe that the...
Lorraine, get the couch ready.
Yeah. And I believe that the recording that Steve is making will back me up. And if it doesn't now, we'll edit it so it does.
Into the studios after this.
And it is free. I've not gone over the edge.
Thank you, honey.
The shark to the part where you pay money.
Thank you,
although
honey.
I found where that is.
I love you,
and
honey.
I know your PayPal number, so...
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. This is the problem with actually trusting your wife when she did. She has not gone over the deep end, though, so I'm very happy. Yeah. Thank you, honey.
Yeah, but you got two of them, though, in the house hooked on Farmville.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Both of them can spend their own money if they want to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going back to see what I can harvest now.
But she knows your
PayPal
number.
Okay, honey, I know what I've harvested, and I'll be picking it up when I get home.
Yes, you will.
All right, I love you.
Love you.
Bye. Well, that was the wrong number.
Boy, that was sidestepping if I've ever heard it.
Listen, I know where I stand and, more importantly, where I sleep in my house. So let's admit right now that I do not now, nor have I ever worn the pants in my family. All right. All right, our next caller is Sal from Fairport. Luckily, I don't know Sal, so this could be a...
I do, so... Hey, Sal, how you doing?
Pretty good. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
How's your new quad?
My beast.
Yeah.
You know what? That's the problem. You have FireWire 800 on this thing, and everything I have is FireWire 400.
Yeah, we have cable adapters at our office.
You didn't suggest it to me.
We forget.
You forgot.
Yeah, it's one of the things Apple has done is all the new Macs, except the white MacBook, annoyingly, have FireWire 800 ports on them, which is the next generation of, actually it was the previous generation, next generation.
Right.
The next is 3200, which is coming. So, yeah, it's a faster version of FireWire, but Apple, in their annoying wisdom, removed the 400 port.
Yeah.
Because 800 is backward compatible.
Right.
So they actually don't need a 400 port. It just means you have to buy a cable adapter.
Okay, I just need a quick fix. I complicated some of the issue here. I started it up, couldn't do the migration. Okay, I'll try the migration later. Logged it in. Same username.
Yeah, you have to rename the user. The next time you start the migration assistant, for everyone else, Apple's migration assistant is a little bit like Microsoft's file settings and transfer wizard, but it also transfers all your programs too, which is nice. So it migrates everything from your old Mac to your new Mac, your applications, your email, your bookmarks, everything. But it most importantly, it transfers your username. So if you... The first time you turn on your Mac, it asks you to do the migration, and if you say no, you create a username. If you then try to do the migration later and you picked the same username, it's going to ask you to rename that user. Unfortunately, it can't rename the user you're currently logged in as.
Right.
So the trick is to make another admin user with any other name. Then it will rename your new user that you created and let you migrate the old user.
Okay.
And if anyone else got that, let me know.
I didn't get that.
Right, you can't migrate the same username because it can't replace files that are in use.
So you suggest I log in under a different user, do the migration.
Right, make a temp user, do your migration of your old computer, and then it will ask you to rename the username when you're bringing it in.
Okay, and it asks to rename the new one. I did it. It kind of. partially came in. I got all my things on my desktop. I can't go back in Time Machine. Different user.
Time Machine sees it as a different computer now. Okay. There are hacks for that to make Time Machine think it's the same computer and continue on rather than starting over again.
Is it easier if I just put in my install disk?
Yeah, that might be the easiest thing. Wipe it clean and then say, yes, I want to migrate on the very first boot.
And I can actually migrate from my, now that I have the cable.
Right, you've got the cable.
I could do my Time.
You can also migrate over Ethernet. So if you don't have the FireWire cable, you can use Ethernet. Interestingly enough, Ethernet at 1,000 megabit is slower than FireWire at 800 megabit.
Yes, and I was doing Wi-Fi even, which was even slower.
Well, yeah, Wi-Fi is 200 megabit if you're lucky.
So if I do the Time Machine backup at that point, it should be much faster and much easier that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, that's one of our general suggestions. Anyone doing the Time Machine, which is Apple's built-in backup program, when you do your first backup, it backs up everything on the hard drive.
Yeah.
Hardwire to your backup drive.
Much better.
Instead of taking overnight, it will take a couple hours. Okay. Then your incrementals can be wireless. That's no problem.
All right. I'll just do the install disk, and it's hardwired now to the machine, so I can do a backup from my Time Machine.
Yeah.
There you go.
Migrate it from that. Okay.
Yep.
Thanks.
So Apple's tried to make it easy to migrate from your old machine up to your new machine, although they do make it a little tricky if your old machine doesn't have FireWire, and some of the old Macs didn't have FireWire. If you'd use the Ethernet migration, you have to have 10.4 on your previous machine. So that's two versions old. So Microsoft only lets you upgrade one version old, which is a little better on Apple's part. If you try to upgrade from XP to Vista, it's an annoying upgrade. Because Microsoft calls upgrade in place different than upgrade.
Right, right. All right, our next caller is Mike from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Thanks, Nick. Steve. Dave, great job. Love
Thank
your
you.
Show.
Thank you.
I have a 2-year-old HP Pavilion laptop that cannot check for Windows updates for some reason. It offers me the chance to check for updates, but then it ends with some error message. It's also running Vista. I just recently bought Windows 7, and I'm thinking that perhaps I can just install Windows 7 and be done with all these error problems.
Well, probably not.
The errors might move into the new system.
Yeah, but a number of them, though, will be eliminated. Right. I have found on a couple.
Well, it just depends on it depends on what the error message is, Mike.
That's where I was going to say, you can, but.
Right.
Like we always say, depends.
It depends. Have you danced the security tango?
Oh, yes, all the time.
All right, then it probably isn't that. So it probably is some sort of problem in the registry, and I don't know that I would trust it.
Sometimes what you can do, the general cause is that a previous update
That was
failed.
Special.
My microphone just pulled away from me.
Well, I'm trying to tell you.
And it should be. You were a little too close.
You're eating it too much.
Well, I'm used to you got to get your face right in the mic.
A previous
Microsoft update may have failed, which is preventing newer updates from getting in. The problem is you usually don't know what that previous one is. But sometimes what you can do is manually download the new update and install that update manually, and that may fix the previous error.
But
may.
What I would suggest is in the Windows 7 DVD, is it provides you with a way to back up your data and then do a fresh install. I highly recommend doing that.
Let me also suggest that you back it up by hand first for two reasons. Mm-hmm. One, so that you can verify that backup, and two, in case your data are in any odd places that Windows wouldn't think to back up. Because it's not magic. Windows is not going to know where all your data are. They'll just back up whatever's in my documents.
Especially if you've turned around and created a separate folder for putting in pictures
If you've created a separate folder or you've created a separate you've got a secondary hard drive, partitioned the drive or whatever, Windows will not know that and will wipe out all your stuff. So make sure you back it all up by hand first and then install clean. Now, that does mean you're going to have to install all your programs all over again. But you know what? That's certainly better than having a corrupted registry right from the get-go in Windows 7.
Right, right. Okay. I will follow that advice. I have One other quick question.
Yep.
I've got an XP machine here that I'm using Firefox on, and I'm looking at your webcam, and I keep getting the message that says Firefox prevented this page from automatically reloading, and I get that on a lot of Firefox pages now. It must have been a new update. Any suggestions?
The Java?
Yeah, there's a Java. Just did it again. There's a Java issue that the webcam uses Java software to display, and bad guys have taken over a lot of Java and JavaScript. So somewhere there's in the Firefox preferences, and this is going to be a little dangerous, that you have to turn on automatic refresh of Java or automatic Java execution, something like that. Which also means that some of the bad guys' software can also do that as well.
Yeah.
What you may want to get is there's a Firefox plugin for Java called NoScript. And what that does is, not specifically with Java, but also JavaScript, which is in no way related to Java, which is annoying. But the NoScript plugin for Firefox will prevent any scripts from running on a page. And you can give it a whitelist so that when you go to a certain page, say the Soundbites website, it always runs any script. That way you won't have to run into these refresh problems.
Oh, great. Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Sure.
Good luck with it. Let us know how you make out.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We do get it's an interesting set of problems, isn't it? When
new technology
comes out. Of these programs are designed to help you, and yet they can also hinder you simultaneously, and this is an example of one. Preventing the page from reloading means that the bad guys can't send you somewhere that you don't want to go, but it also, therefore, also gives you a problem in terms of when you want to let a page reload. So it's an interesting little problem. You know, it's just a refresh in the page, which, again, sounds so simple, but still, that's the way that works. It's an interesting... the world, it's that leapfrog thing we've talked about 100 times before. You know, we've got people who are working very diligently to get around all the safeguards that we've got today, and it's a day-to-day thing.
Yep.
All right, here's an interesting article I ran across. Google's Android operating system is gaining the interest of increasing numbers of U.S. customers and potentially distracting them from Apple's iPhone, according to a December 17th report from Comscore. When in August, mobile users were asked which phone they planned to buy in the next 3 months, 7% said T-Mobile's G1 or T-Mobile's MyTouch, the only two Android running devices available at the time, while 21% named the iPhone. When the question was again asked in November, 17% of respondents said they planned to buy an Android device, and only 20% said they planned to shop for an iPhone. Among those on the eye for Android smartphones in November, 8% named the Motorola Droid in particular. Verizon Wireless has thoroughly advertised the Droid, which I want a Droid, which
you're
currently exclusive to its network, and Comscore called the effort a success, noting that while Android's market share is small, it has doubled over the course of the year, reaching 3.5% in October. And don't forget, it didn't even exist in August.
Mm-hmm.
So it's moving up astonishingly. Comscore also found, not surprisingly, that iPhone and Android users behave differently from other smartphone users, engaging with more mobile data and making use of the full capabilities of their devices, which should offer developers and carriers more encouragement still. Averaging numbers from polling in July, August, and September, Comscore found that 94% of iPhone users and 92% of Android users said they interact with mobile media on their devices, while only 80% of other smartphone users said the same. Android and iPhone users also equally turn to their browsers for news and information, 80% in both cases, while only 65% of other smartphone users do. However, while Android and iPhone users owners use instant messaging, engage in social networking more than other smartphone users do, emailing broke up the pair, with 70% of general smartphone users saying they email on their phones versus 63% of Android users and 87% of iPhone users. Dominating the survey, however, was a desire for Rims Crackberry handsets. Among those asked in November which smartphone they plan to buy in the next 3 months, 18%, a higher percentage than for any other device, said the BlackBerry Pearl, while another 13% named the BlackBerry Storm, and 11% said the BlackBerry Curve. So 42%. Of people were buying those. BlackBerry Bold and the Tour also made the list, putting them up at over 50%. Only 2% of consumers said they plan to purchase a Palm Pre, while 1% plan to buy a Palm Sentra. So Palm is kind of losing the war. They announced a net loss of $81.9 million for the fiscal second quarter of 2010, citing low demand for the Palm smartphones on the Sprint network, which was also offered several handsets running the Android. So our question for you, are you wavering from the iPhone? Do you have Android lust in your heart? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Like Bert did. Bert, where are you calling from?
Palmyra.
Palmyra, New York. What a joyous place it is. And what what can we do for you?
We're life's worth living.
Oh, that's Webster. I just bought a used computer from a friend. And compared to anything I've had before, it's a screaming fast monster. First time I've had a large hard drive, and I've got room enough that I'd like to set up a dual boot situation. The machine's got Vista Home Premium on it. I've got 102 gigs of free space there. Just want to know if you had any words of wisdom beyond the Ubuntu home site recommendations on dual booting.
Ubuntu is exceptional. So is Mint. Both of them are very good, and if you just put in the disk, read the screens carefully, because it will say, oh, I see you've got another operating system. Do you want to share the hard drive or wipe out the old one? Make sure you say share. Read every screen before you click on anything, and that'll let you know where what's going on. Don't, you know, the worst thing we see is people who say, well, I didn't really read the screen. I just clicked, and now I'm in trouble. Now it's too late. But in general, they lead you through it by the hand, not a problem. You just have to look before you click.
Okay. Two things they've recommended on those on the forum documentation are defragging before you do anything, and then compressing the existing.
Defragging is fine, but you don't need to bother to compress, because the actual dual boot process will do that for you.
Okay.
And we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
Hands can do incredible things. They made every sound in this piece of music. But nothing compares to using them to help save a life. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. Visit handsonlycpr.org today. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Tom Castronova. Please allow me to refresh your memory. Used to be on Mondays from 6 to 9 when I started on this station. Then I moved to Tuesdays and did this thing called Tuesdays with the Two Toms, and we featured Louis Armstrong music. Then I moved back to Monday from 6 to 9. Now I'm back on Tuesday. You got all that? So please, join me Tuesdays from 6 to 9 p.m. right here on member-supported Jazz Radio in Rochester, Jazz 90.1.
This is Devon. Join me every Monday night from 9 until midnight as I kick off Jazz Horizons right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 41 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And
Dave,
I hear nothing.
Well, you didn't ask him, if he was going to do it first.
Yes, I did. He said right after the break. All right, you know what that sound eventually means. If we can slap him awake, and clearly we need to do that. Get your footy jammies on. Grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because we will eventually slap him awake. It's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, yep. All right. I try to be pleasant. You know, it's the holidays. But Weird Walter here just parked me off. One thing I've always said that I won't do for folks, you know, we try to solve their problems.
Yes.
You know? But where is one area that I will not encourage folks to go?
Well, there's a couple. They need to bring in real discs if they want something
right, but
done.
No, I mean, as far as going in and making any adjustments. We say MS config is okay.
Oh, don't do the registry.
Yes, muck
about in the registry.
Thank you very much. Well, I had some yo-yo sit there and want me to give him step-by-step instructions.
Over the phone?
No, his computer.
It's usually over the phone.
Well, he says, you're going to go ahead and fix it. I want to know step-by-step what you did. I go, no.
You're right.
He goes, well, what if I want to fix it later? I says, evidently, you don't listen.
You'll never have the same problem later either.
I will not tell you how to go in there and do it. I do not want to be responsible, because if you delete the most insignificant key that you don't think is pertinent, you could mess things up seriously.
How many times do we hear people say, I didn't know what it did, so
yes,
I deleted
yes.
it? Guess what? You don't know anything about what's in the registry, so if you delete all that stuff, don't call us.
But he's getting indignant because I won't tell him step by step of what I did to go in there. I says, I went in and made some adjustments to the registry. Well, I want to know exactly which ones. I'm paying for this service. I have a right to know. I said, exactly. You have the right to know. I went in there, made some adjustments. Well, what keys and what did you change?
I make adjustments to the human spine.
I says, I will not tell you that. I says, because I fixed it. I got it working. If you go in there and accidentally delete the wrong key, it's messed up. And then who's going to get in trouble? Especially, you're ready for the kicker? It's a business machine.
No,
yes.
never muck about in the registry on the business machine.
It's like, hello, trust me, I got it working, I got it run. Because when it came in, it didn't even boot.
Mm-hmm.
I got it booting, I got it working, I got it. Matter of fact, he said it's running faster than it did before it even went down.
Mm-hmm. Probably because he mucked about in the registry first, and that's what caused it to not boot.
Right.
But, we hear similar stories all the time. Tell me exactly what you did. Well, one, you probably won't understand it. And two, you probably won't have that exact same circumstance again.
Listen,
well,
folks,
do you even go to your mechanic and say, I want to know the step-by-step and what wrench sizes you use to fix this?
Let me explain this to you very simply. Getting something fixed costs money. Education costs more money. I suspect these guys would be happy to teach you how to muck about in the registry for about $300 an hour, and it's going to take 15 or 20 hours before you really understand what's going on in the registry.
Mm-hmm.
They don't dip into the registry just because it's there. They dip into the registry because collectively they have about 50, well, with Dave and their 200 years of experience, with the registry and going in and knowing what it's about and what it does and all the peripheral things about it. And that's not something they can impart to you while you stand there and watch them fix something on the bench. It just isn't. It's like asking an astrophysicist to explain what's going on with their experiments deep underground trying to find gravity waves.
Have you found the Higgs boson yet?
Exactly.
Or and how did you do it?
Asking somebody at CERN to tell you how the Hadron Collider works. You don't have enough back information to understand the information I'm about to tell you. And people say, I know all about computers. So whenever somebody does that to me, I tell them exactly what it is I'm doing. And invariably, I get a look like I've been speaking Swahili.
Uh-huh.
They don't get it.
Yeah.
Because there's so much back information they do not have.
I wanted to put one of those signs up in the shop, but I've been afraid to, and I don't think Jackie will ever. let me. You know, service rate, you know, all right, round numbers, $100 an hour. If you watch, $200 an hour. If you help, $500 an hour.
Yes, yes, exactly. Well, the other thing is, too, is, you know, I wanted to know, well, what about all these Trojans? Because I removed, it was like over 572 Trojans and spyware. Well, what were all of those? I said,
You don't want me to take the time to write all those down?
I said, you know, the machine just automatically, I don't print them off. One, your computer's not set up to print off my system, and I'm not going to tell you. And they wouldn't mean stuff to you. I said, it's just sufficient that all you need to know, simplistically, is like on Malwarebytes, you click on Run Updates, then you go in, tell it to run the program. It'll find all the items in red that it needs to remove. Do you need to know any more? No. Can you do anything more about it? No. Just say, remove. It did its job. We provide you with a particular program that will remove it. That's all you need to know. Anything else, you're going to get yourself in doo-doo.
That's exactly right. And in addition, it won't tell you anything. Viruses come up randomly from people all the time. It's not going to tell you any more about where you got it or how you got it to see what it is, because any one website could send you 50 viruses. People really are unable to understand that a computer is more complex than a car. And
but
that you need a lot of back knowledge before you can understand what's going on. You need a lot of previous knowledge. It's like getting a college education. You don't go into a senior level class. You start at a freshman level class. You start at the 101 classes. Why? Because you're stupid? No, because you need back information before you can get the end information. And us just giving you the end information really, really, really isn't going to help. All right, kiddies, there it is. Apparently we all get in on that rant just a little bit.
Yes, I love it.
So
family effort.
Rinse out your hot cocoa mugs, get out of your footy jammies, and we're going to stick the needle in all three of us this week and put us
we
all back
it.
On the
I
shelf
mean,
for another week.
Yeah, and that just closing out the end of the year, you know? And
I'm always glad to teach people, but there's a difference between teaching them and giving them massive amounts of information in a single sitting. Mm-hmm. It can't be done. You need to go and absorb some information and try a few things yourself and think about it for a while and then come back and learn more.
A lot of this is a feel for it, too. It's almost impossible to teach.
Well, and this is the problem. Troubleshooting. I've been thinking about this for decades now, and teaching troubleshooting is hard because there are some people who just have a feel. You know, and it's not psychic. It's years of experience.
It's what makes you good at your talent.
Well, that's exactly right.
What I always describe it, you know, anybody in the tech field, and I don't know whether Steve agrees with me on this one or not, be on the Mac side, but it takes a certain person that, you know, day in, day out, we see all these issues and all that. And I guess, you know, a lot of folks think, you're weird. Well, I knew that anyways. But that I enjoy searching out these problems and finding it. You know, finding a solving it.
Solving problems.
Each day is something different.
That's why we do
the
show.
What I love about my business is every day is not the same, because there's always this problem, that problem. Granted, it's a computer, but multiple things can, intertwine and cause these issues. And it's that detective work. And it takes a special person to, you know, ferret it out and do it. And like I say, to sit there and, teach these folks what I've done for over 25 years now.
Right.
You know, and God love my wife. You know, matter of fact, I got to put out a special shout to her, because come Monday, I'll be celebrating 25 years of marriage.
Your wife is a saint.
Yes, she is.
You are a lucky man, and your wife is a saint.
And she's been, you know, behind me and, you know, in the whole business venture that, you know, and put up with some of the frustration, because, you know, at times I use her as a sounding board and all that. You know, I do the rants here, folks, but my wife hears quite a few of them, too, when I get going on some of them. But it's that knowledge that we try to put.
Let me get this straight. You spent the entire time since I got yelled at by my wife figuring out what nice thing you were going to say to your wife so you looked even better when you got home.
Yep,
all right,
yep,
I just want to get that straight. I just want to understand.
And I did it, didn't I?
You did. You did good.
Yeah, I joke with my wife. You know, she's been married for 30 years, but we've been married for 15.
Right.
When you add them all up.
Right. Tayville sent something to me on the Twitter account. He said, new email for Nick, doghouse@asknick.com or couchbound@asknick.com.
Yeah. Yeah. Matter of fact, he's going to be coming up here. Tayville is coming up this coming Thursday.
Tayville is one of the guys who's we met through Second Life. Dave knows him from Dreams, yep. And I know him from the Soundbites. Like, we're not in Second Life this coming Friday. We're taking New Year's off, as a matter of fact. As we did Christmas. But we will be back the week after that. So if you've gotten involved in Second Life, please feel free to come and join us. You can find the link on our website at soundbites.org and join us every Friday night, except this coming Friday night, in Second Life.
We're there, and it's just like here. We answer people's questions. But the unique thing about Second Life, because a lot of folks say, what is this? It doesn't cost anything to get into it.
Right.
It's a free program. You can meet a lot of folks from all over the world. I mean, I've got close friends in Sydney, Australia. I've got them in England. Tay there, he's down in South Carolina. Wyoon's down there in South Carolina. Whereas Dory and Golda are over in Omaha, Nebraska. You know, I mean, we got folks all over that come to this, all walks of life and everything else, and it's amazing. And that's the cool thing. You know, we talk about the old days, Paul Casarino and the Gem Lab and all that, when we did the bulletin board. I mean, that was just single interface, you know, and it was slow and all that. I mean, you're talking real time to folks all over the world.
Yep.
It just blows me away that, you know, it's like, holy mackerel. You know, this is unbelievable.
Some people get into it for building things like Dave does. Some people get into it just for the social aspect. So you can be whatever you want to be there and do whatever you want to do. And it's kind of a fun thing. I go in mostly for Second Life, for the soundbite stuff that we do on Friday nights.
I found a new thing. I'm going to put it on our sim.
Yeah.
Skydiving.
Nice.
You get a parachute and you can sit in this thing and it shoots you up 4,000 meters.
Oh, Lolly's got that at the Devil Girl Bar.
Yeah, I get. Put it.
Lex sent me a cube. It's on my land. You can see my new Nissan Cube. Not only do I have one here, but I also have one in Second Life. So it's really very nice.
Cool.
So yeah, we get in there and we play a little bit, and it's kind of fun. Time, I think, for another question. Paul from Rochester, New York writes, can I run the Security Tango? I have Windows ME. I saw on your website that you do, I think you said something about older versions. Well, there's a difference between older versions and decrepit versions, Paul.
Deprecated versions.
And deprecated. Deprecated, decrepit versions. Windows Millennium Edition, which was not Microsoft's shining hour.
It wasn't even a moment.
What's the word I'm looking for?
A piece of junk.
Steaming pile of junk. It's really, there are older versions of software that will work on it. Not all of the stuff we have will. And it's a real problem in terms of finding those anymore because it's so old. The newest versions don't work. Our suggestion continues to be really don't go on the internet with really, really old versions of Windows like that. Microsoft has abandoned it. All of the developers of antivirus software have mostly abandoned it. So you will find a couple of things out there, but not much, and you got to be very careful. All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank all of you called in. I want to apologize to all of those of you to whom we did not get. Please call in earlier and more often next week. I especially want to say thank you to all of you for another glorious year of Soundbites. This is our last show of 2009. We'll be starting a brand new decade next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you on the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Happy New Year.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1.